Ezekiel saw the wheel.
He saw that wheel.
Where in the middle of the air, Ezekiel.
Here's what we learn from the National Endowment for the Arts, as the Dixie Hummingbirds were given the honor of receiving an NEA National Heritage Fellowship in the year 2000. That is the nation's highest honor in folk and traditional arts. The 1920s saw the rise of a key predecessor of what we today call gospel music. Southern African American quartets injected new rhythmic drive and performing panache into their jubilee renditions of biblical verse. The Virginia-based Golden Gate Quartet inspired countless others throughout the Deep South to follow their lead. In 1928, in Greenville, South Carolina, James B. Davis did just that, organizing a quartet with fellow students at Sterling High School that would be called the Dixie Hummingbirds.
In the middle of the air, oh, when I get up on the mountaintop, in the middle of the air.
The Birds would play a major role in quartet singing throughout the South and in gospel music in general. In the words of gospel historian Tony Heilbutt, so many great quartets, yet among Black Southerners, the Dixie Hummingbirds have always been the leaders. In the 1930s, the Dixie Hummingbirds pursued their musical career in earnest, touring wildly. In the late 1930s, they recorded 16 a cappella sides for the nationally distributed Decca label, including their breakthrough hit, Joshua Journeyed to Jericho, that brought them regional acclaim. The ban on recording brought by World War II meant a hiatus of their recording activities, but they continued to tour nevertheless. They performed regularly in New York City and were heard throughout the East Coast on their regular radio appearances. The group relocated to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in 1942 and changed its personnel as Ira Tucker, Beachy Thompson, and William Bobo teamed up with James B. Davis. They'd record more than 35 sides by the end of the decade for the Apollo, Gotham, and Regis labels. For years, they set the pace for quartet singing, writes Viv Broughton in the book Black Gospel. The Hummingbirds and Ira Tucker, who was their lead singer, remained at the head of the gospel quartet singing for almost 30 years, becoming the grand masters of style. The NEA statement continued, "Today, after performing continuously for over 70 years, they are the last of an entire generation of artists who provided the foundation of Black music in the U.S. today. Popular music artists whom they've influenced have included The Temptations, James Brown, Stevie Wonder, Bobby Blue Bland, Al Green, and Shirley Caesar. In 1973, they backed up Paul Simon on his hit recording, Love Me Like a Rock, and their own version of that song later won them a Grammy. That from the National Endowment for the Arts, bestowing the Dixie Hummingbirds with a National Heritage Fellowship in 2000. As the NEA suggests, the Dixie Hummingbirds turned out to be the last of an entire generation of artists who provided the foundation of Black music in the U.S. today. And Reverend Joe Williams is the last of the Birds now, and he is dedicated to keeping their legacy alive. 6 years later, after receiving the NEA honor, Edward Rendell, then governor of Pennsylvania, named the Dixie Hummingbirds the Artist of the Year during the 2006 Governor's Awards for the Arts ceremony, taking place right here in Wilkes-Barre at the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts on October 12, 2006. This specific honor, known as the Hazlitt Memorial Award, recognizes Pennsylvania artists for their excellence and contributions to their field. Dixie Hummingbirds were celebrated for their nearly 80-year legacy at that time as pioneers of modern gospel music and for their deep ties to Philadelphia, which served as their headquarters for decades.
She loved me, loved me, loved me, loved me. She loved me, loved me, loved me, loved me. My mama loved me.
The Byrds performed at that ceremony in Wilkes-Barre and brought the house down. In the aisle before the show, Reverend Joe brought lead singer Ira B. Tucker, Mr. Tucker, as Reverend Joe always called him, to a table where WVIA Radio was broadcasting conversations with the award winners, and it was so very clear that Mr. Tucker was passionate about singing to his very core, and that Reverend Joe, as most everyone calls him, looked up to Mr. Tucker and had the same deep love for singing in his soul. Shortly after the Governor's Awards, the Byrds were back in Wilkes-Barre by popular demand at the Kirby Center, and we had a chance to speak by phone with Mr. Tucker beforehand about his innovative ways on the stage. Mr. Tucker, what was the first time you started to move about and get a sense that you didn't have to just stand in one place?
I was in Suffolk, Virginia, when I decided that I would jump down off of the stage. And when I jumped down, I ran out of my coat, you know, and that excited everybody. So after that, you know, it was a routine we'd go through, you know. It worked real good, but I was really sincere about it. See, I didn't do that just for a show. I felt spirit, and look, the spirit just told me to jump, and I jumped down on the floor. And everybody said, "Oh my God, what is it? Nobody's been doing that, you know." And I went on up the aisle, and folk were just falling out and shouting and carrying on. It was wonderful.
Mr. Ira Tucker, lead singer of the Dixie Hummingbirds, speaking with us by phone in October of 2006 in anticipation of the gospel group's second performance at the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, back by popular demand after captivating the entire audience at the Pennsylvania Governor's Awards for the Arts ceremony at the Kirby Center earlier in the year, when the Dixie Hummingbirds were honored for their 7 decades of pioneering performance artistry in the world of gospel music, moving from the southern part of the United States and settling in their adopted home of Philadelphia. An art scene feature in anticipation of the back-by-demand performance of the Dixie Hummingbirds in Wilkes-Barre at the F.M. Kirby Center. Very shortly, Reverend Joe will tell us an amusing story about the way that Mr. Tucker may have just saved his job with the Dixie Hummingbirds in 1983. Save the Reverend Joe. And always, when talking about the Byrds, Reverend Joe speaks with humility. It is so very fitting, then, that Dr. Lynn Peterson has written a memoir of Reverend Joe Williams chronicling his stories. The book is titled Flying with the Byrds, the last original member of the iconic Dixie Hummingbirds. And we had a chance to speak by phone with Reverend Joe about his life in music. You just went to Nashville to the National Museum of African American Music.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us about the museum. It's the only museum like it, isn't it?
Exactly. Matter of fact, I was there 2 years ago when they opened the doors. I'm in the museum. You made me famous, Ms. Ucker. I left my uniform and a couple other things that belong to the Dixie Hummingbirds. My wife didn't like the suit that I left 2 years ago. So my wife and I and daughter, we flew down to Nashville and took a new suit to them. So I'm just proud to be in that museum. All the songs and all the great African-American music that was made is in that museum. So it's a gorgeous place. So if anybody can take their families there, they would never regret it.
Now, Reverend Joe, they asked you to talk, didn't they?
Not only to talk, they wanted me to find out, when did I first start singing, who did I sing with? all my history, and they recorded everything because they're going to put it in the library so they can always have it forever and ever. So the sob story of my life, they thought it was pretty good.
So they were really doing an oral history of your life.
Yes, I didn't realize that. And they wanted to know about what kind of suggestions could I give them to make the museum work and other things. And I felt it's a great family affair to know that some of the songs you don't hear on the radio anymore is because people that own the station want to make money. But some of the great songs, when you hear that music and they had some lot of young people singing, it was outstanding.
Is there a gospel section? Is it by categories partly?
Well, that's funny you would say that because I wrote it in my notes. Music is a big room. We cannot stay in this little corner of it. They've got all kind of music, reggae, blues, opera, gospel. That's what I went down talking about, the gospel. But it takes you a whole day to view the museum because they have pictures of the old famous groups. I'm in that old famous group picture anyhow. But the music is so great, and you hear all that music. You want to say, what? How did I? Some of the music, maybe you never heard it before. But then it brings back a lot of great memories. And I think, as you said, as far as I know, it's the only museum of its kind dedicated to all genres of music. It's outstanding.
Say you were there, you and your wife and daughter were there. Was there music there that particularly spoke to you when you were a young fellow? Were there different kinds of music that maybe wasn't gospel yet in your life that might be in that museum?
Yes, I started singing over the radio station when I was 5 with a group of little kids. My next-door neighbor was my music teacher. So when I went to junior high school, I started singing rock and roll. And my music teacher hit the ceiling because she said, I don't want you singing that rock and roll. You're going to ruin your voice. But I stuck with the rock and roll until I became 12, and I saw the Victory Hummingbirds at a concert. And I told my mother then, I said, you know, that's what I want to do, what they're doing. Never dreaming that years later I would become a member of the Victory Hummingbirds, but that's the music that made me feel a certain way. No other music had ever made me feel that way as gospel. It's hard to explain it. Then when I saw the power of the music, years later, when I go to nursing homes, they would play some of the old gospel music for some of the patients. I've seen patients that couldn't walk get out of wheelchairs and start to walk. It's a very powerful music, so I knew then this is what I want to do. And I still feel that way about it. I'm the last living member of the Dixie Hummingbirds, which is a group that I never dreamed in life I would be part of, but I try to carry on that legacy. I know the power of this music can't be replaced.
And you actually worked with prisoners to teach them how to sing gospel?
Yes, ma'am. I'm so glad you brought that up. This jockey in Philadelphia saw me. I went by the radio station to take some records to them. And she said, well, you're going to go to prison with me today. And I said, Dr. Maddie Humphrey, I can't go to prison. I just got home off the road. She said, no, you're going to prison with me. So I went to the prison. And I saw the group on the stage trying to sing. She said, you could help these young guys. So I took off my jacket and ran up on the stage and trying to show them what to do. On the way back home, she said, you don't know what you did today. I said, what? All those guys you were talking to, like, they were lifers. They don't never talk to many people at all. But I tried to show them. And under my breath, I said, I'll never come back here again. But a couple of them told me, hey, Reverend, you got to come back to help us out. Got to come back. We love you. Sure enough, the following week, I was going back on a Tuesday night to the auditorium, 400 or 500 men in its audience, and I was back trying to help them and show them. I decided then, I said, maybe I don't want to travel. I need to go into the prison, try to help these guys, because they need me. So that's how it all started.
And so they were touched in a way that is inexplicable, like you were touched by the music.
Yes, ma'am. It's unexplainable. And some of those men were never supposed to get out. In Pennsylvania, if you're sentenced to life, you have to serve natural life. Sure enough, a couple of them got out and came with me, and we started a ministry just for ex-offenders. But we found out that everybody's an ex-offender. They never got caught. So that's how this ministry started. And that was 52 years ago. We started a ministry for ex-offenders.
Is there gospel on the radio right now in Philadelphia?
Yes, it is. They have one 24-hour gospel station here in Philadelphia, and it's going pretty good. But you have to have a computer to listen to it. It's not on a normal radio, but they're still doing well.
But radio was important to you, as you mentioned just at the start. You used to sing as a little one with a group on the radio every week.
Yes, called the Children's Church of the Air. And I was proud to be with them. When I became a teenager singing that rock and roll, and my voice was changing. I was never a little kid anymore, so I got too big, and my voice got too heavy.
How did the Dixie Hummingbirds get together in Philadelphia? Were they from the South and came to Philadelphia?
Oh, we're from Greenville, South Carolina, and they moved here to Philadelphia because it's closer to New York. You can work out of Philadelphia, and this was their home base, you see. And that's where I'm from, Philadelphia. Everyone thought I was from the South, but I didn't live in the South. Only time I went to South when I joined the Marine Corps, I went South. But they enjoyed being here in Philadelphia, and the governor of Pennsylvania claimed the Dixie Hummingbirds as the soul of Pennsylvania and the spirit of Philadelphia. No, that's about 15 years ago now. Since that time, we won a Grammy, but it's been a great ride. We were inducted to the Gospel Music Hall of Fame 2 years ago, last year. And so we have the Emmy, Grammys, we're in the Hall of Fame, and we're in that library that we just left in Tennessee. And that library is so important because it keeps everything cataloged, all the songs, who sung the songs. They have pictures of all the old groups. And it's a great place for your family. If you can take your family there, it's worth the trip. It's a gorgeous building, too, by the way. It's on the same street as the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Did the audiences there still remember the Dixie Hummingbirds? Were they listening to records and they wanted to hear you live?
Well, you know, it's funny you would say what you said, because the Dixie Hummingbirds didn't just have fans. They made family out of the people. See, in rock and roll, you on the stage, person can't really touch you and come close to you. But in gospel singing, during intermission, we mingled with the audience and we all became family. So when we travel now, people still remember, well, I remember you with the Dixie Hummingbirds. Matter of fact, when we get in town, they'd call each member by name. Where's Otter Tucker? Because it made people believe they were family, and that was a unique attribute that the Dixie Hummingbirds had. They were really people's persons.
We hate to say it, but we just want to ask, because it is history, did you experience discrimination when you guys were going down to sing in the South?
Time, but when the Lord would have it, I didn't realize it being from the North. I didn't know about all the segregation and all the trouble that the Dixie Hummingbirds had before I got with them. So it gave me enough nerve to just go any place, do what I wanted to do. As a matter of fact, some Sunday morning when we didn't sing, I'd go to white churches, and when the Dixie Hummingbirds asked me, I said, well, you're in the South, you can't do that. But I didn't have that fear, because I came up, I was just as good as anyone else, which was good. So even to today, I don't have the fear of anyone. Matter of fact, I think the greatest group in the world I ever known was the Dixie Hummingbirds. A lot of the disc jockeys wouldn't even say that.
You mentioned just a couple of seconds ago Mr. Tucker, Ira Tucker. What did you learn from Mr. Tucker? What were his gifts?
All the showmanship, all the how to be humble, and how to not get the horse like I am now. He had a special conception he would put in his pocket. It was BC. It's a medicine. I don't think it's in out of stock now. But it was a powdery. I've never heard him hoarse because of that. He would suck on that. BC, which that's the name of the company. And it helped him stay clear. But I got humbleness from them. They never acted like they were above the audience. And they mingled with all the people. That's what made them so famous.
There was something you told us when we've spoken before, Reverend Joe, about the discipline and the need to be on time, to be dressed properly, all of those things. It was a show of respect to the people and to the music, right?
Amen. That's what Mr. Davis was, the manager and owner of the group. He would always say, we can't control how we're going to sing tonight, but we can certainly control how we're going to look. And certainly we all looked the best we could every night. Everyone had the same ties, same shirts, same socks, same handkerchiefs, same suits, same everything. So you had to be in uniform. It gave you discipline on the stage and off the stage.
I ask you to tell the story, if you don't mind, Reverend Joe, the story about the time you all were television stars when it was NBA time and the 76ers were on the line there and you sang on national TV.
One day they were going up to North Jersey to sing. I was home, the phone rang, and on the other end of the phone, man said, "I'm for the Wide World of Sports. We'd like for you guys to come to New Jersey." We were singing in New Jersey that night. Anyhow, we'll come from New York and film, record you guys singing. And the TV people said, "If we can come in and film you, we need you to sing, 'Moses is going to take us to the promised land.' Moses Malone was the star player. Moses is going to take us to the promised land. This is the last night of the championship. If the 76ers win tonight, they'd win the national championship. And I think Moses is going to do it. So we need you guys to sing, 'Moses is going to take us to the promised land.'" I said, "Well, I'll let you know." He said, "You don't understand. You don't have the time to let me know. We need to know now." It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, "Because we've got to send our technicians, the trucks, all the way to Englewood, New Jersey, from New York, to film you guys singing that 'Moses is going to take us to the promised land' and be ready for the night game." So when I got off the phone, I said, "Well, I guess I'm going to lose my job because I just got with the birds singing-wise. I shouldn't have told. I had no authorization to tell him we would do it or not." So all the way to Englewood that night, I was real quiet. Mr. Davis said, "Joe, what's wrong? You're not talking." I said, "Mr. Davis, Wide World of Sports want us to do a song tonight. Moses want to take us to the promised land." But there was only two things wrong. There was no such song out, "Moses is going to take us to the promised land." And then Mr. Davis said, "No, we can't do that. I'm not going to do it." My heart dropped. So Mr. Tucker told Mr. Davis, "Davis, we can make that song up tonight. Once we get to the church, we can make it up. We can do it." Sure enough, when we got to the church, changing our clothes, they were all sitting around in a circle. And Mr. Tucker said, "Give me a background." And they made up the song on the spot. "Moses is going to take us to the promised land." That's how it happened.
And you were broadcast all across the country because the 76ers won.
Yep, and they haven't won a game since, ever won a championship since. That was 1983.
Did you ever sing the song again, or it was just a one time?
Never again. So funny you would ask that. Never sang that song again. They made it up that night, and that was the end of it. And we can't convince the 76ers to try to find footage of that. I would love to see. They taped it at halftime that night, but no one seems to know how we can find the footage of singing that song.
Were you then even more famous, well-known after that appearance?
Yes, ma'am. And we would meet people that said, "Moses took us to the promised land." Those are groups that made us famous. "Moses is going to take us to the promised land."
So, Reverend Joe, you're the torchbearer right now for the Dixie Hummingbirds.
I'm carrying on the legacy of what they've done. Matter of fact, I do a lot of traveling now. Half the time I pay for it myself. Because I'll tell you, I owe that much to the Dixon Birds. They've never died. As long as I'm living, I'll keep the story going.
I think it's so appropriate that Dr. Lynn Peterson wrote a biography of you.
First born lady, she had never met me before. I married her and her husband 30 years ago. And she told her husband, "You know, we ought to find that minister who married us because we didn't give him enough money." So when she found me, she said, "I'm not only going to give you this money we should have given you 30 years ago, I'm going to write a book about you." And that's how the book came about, Flying with the Birds.
I love it when you say the birds.
Yeah.
And you have your feet on the ground, though, Reverend Joe, because you're
in. Thank you so much.
You've been working with prisoners, but you're also sore because of where that music that you made and continue to make takes you.
Well, I think the music is so spiritual that it takes you to a place that you never, you know, I think we need more of that. And we need to love everybody. And we're all one big family. So once we find it out, I think the world would be a better place. And I want to thank God for you, because the way the Lord would have it, I kept in touch with you all these years, never knowing here we are again.
And I thank you so much for keeping in touch. Tell us what you think about music in our world today.
I think if the world is to ever become one, music is going to be the vehicle to do it.
Well,
the way down south where we came from, in the land of the good sunshine, there's a little bird that flies around, humming all the time. And one day in the spring, while the birds were humming, James B. Davis overheard. And then he decided to name his group the Dixie Hummingbirds. So we've been singing for the master ever since we were in our teens, riding down the highways and all of our pockets cleaned. Who are we?
The Dixie Hummingbirds. The Dixie Hummingbirds.
Well, the road was rough and the going was tough.
Reverend Joseph Williams, speaking with us. He is the last living member of the legendary Dixie Hummingbirds, speaking with us about the award-winning ensemble, and that's in connection with the release of a memoir of his life, written by Dr. Lynn Peterson. The Dixie Hummingbirds, perhaps known broadly for their collaboration with Paul Simon.
When I was a little boy,
when I was just a boy,
the devil called my name.
When I was just a boy,
I say now, who do you think you're fooling?
When I was just a boy,
I'm a consecrated boy.
When I was just a boy,
singer in a Sunday choir.
That, of course, Paul Simon with the Dixie Hummingbirds. The song was recorded in 1972 at the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio in Alabama. And the Dixie Hummingbirds, led then by Ira Tucker, provided this powerful vocal harmony environment that gave the recording its distinctive gospel flavor. And then they won the Grammy for their version of Love Me Like a Rock.
When I was a little boy,
when I was just a boy,
and the devil would call my name,
when I was just a boy,
I'd say,
who
do you think you're fooling?
When I was just a boy,
I'm a consecrated boy.
When I was just a boy,
singer in a Sunday choir. Mama loves me, she loves me. So get down.
The Dixie Hummingbirds in a version of Love Me Like a Rock with Ira Tucker, lead singer, winner for Best Gospel Rendition that year at the Grammys. And we spoke with Reverend Joe Williams about the Dixie Hummingbirds and his life on the road with them and more. And if you'd like more information about the Dixie Hummingbirds, one good place to check is the National Museum of African American Music. And that's in Nashville. The website is NMAAM. That's Nashville Museum of African American Music. So it's NMAAM.org.
Well, the way down south where we came from, in the land of the good sunshine, there's a little bird that flies around, humming all the time. And one day in the spring, while the birds were humming, James B. Davis overheard. And then he decided to name his group the Dixie Hummingbirds. So we've been singing for the master ever since we were in our teens, riding down the highways.
The Dixie
Slim. You know, Slim could be the difference in a meal or maybe none. Slim is when you look for 300 people, you don't see but 21. But let me sing it, mama.